want to be fast because, you know, like Jacqueline said, we have to lay the block and then they'll charge us $40. We don't want that. But more importantly, my wife reminded me of this, is that season two of This Is Us is back on tonight. So I know we all want to get home for that. Well, I definitely appreciate the time to come out and speak to you. This is something, what I'm doing is something that I'm not sure I ever really expected that I would be doing. I think that the people in this room can kind of relate to that. I think recent events over the past couple of years have kind of awoken us to this reality that was always there, but maybe we weren't always willing to look for and see. And what's great about that adversity that has come out is that it has inspired a lot of people to become more involved in the political process, to take more time out of their days, to learn about the issues, learn about what the people that these issues affect, and what they can do together by mobilizing to address these issues. And this is really how I came to decide to run for Congress, because it's the president that we have now is somebody who represents an idea, represents an institution, represents a lot of institutions that actively fight against people like you and me having a voice in this country, and people who have been historically disenfranchised in this country. It is an unfortunate reality of the history of the United States that on the Constitution, the first three words, "we the people," did not always mean the people, a lot of people that are in this room right now. It meant a very select group of people who had money, people who had a certain color skin, people of a certain gender. And over time, this has been something that every generation of Americans has had to grapple with. It's something that every generation has had to really examine themselves and the things that matter to them and make value determinations based on their experiences, on new information. And it is through that process that we have been able to expand and grant new rights and privileges to people who had not had them in the past. And when you get down to it, that is really what being an American is all about. If I had to boil down the two things that America, what it means to be an American, it would be that we are committed to overcoming tyranny and establishing and expanding on our rights and privileges. In my run for Congress, that is what I hope to do. There are a lot of issues that the people of District 7, the people of California, the people of the United States, that are affecting people on a day-to-day basis. And one of the things that we have to keep in mind when we think about the kind of people that we want to send to Washington, D.C., the kind of people who are going to be coming up with the bills and the legislation and the laws, is we have to keep in mind the fact that any legislative act of any consequence will disproportionately affect the groups of people that I talked about earlier, the kind of people who haven't had the kind of representation that we have. So really, my campaign is a quest to continue upon this push for equality and for justice for people, and to fight against those institutions that could put the person that's in the White House there and wants to stymie this effort to progress as a country and as nations of people. So my campaign is going to focus on a number of issues that I feel are important to achieving that. One of the first ones is healthcare. I am a proponent of Medicare for All for many reasons. Number one, I believe it's the right thing to do. Number two, I believe it's economically the option that makes the most sense. Number three, I believe that is a necessary institution if we really want to achieve equality and justice for everybody in this country. Because we cannot have a country that is equal for everybody unless we guarantee this as a right for everybody. A second thing that my campaign will really focus on is political corruption and money in politics. Because when you examine these issues that continually pop up in the American political landscape, you find that there's a common thread in each one of these issues. Whenever you have people in the majority who are being oppressed by wealthy individuals, companies, organizations, they are able to exercise that kind of power over us because they are able to influence the lawmakers and the legislators to do their bidding for them. And that is because we allow money to play such a central role in our politics. And that is something that has to change if we are to regain some of the power that we have lost. So a third thing, I mean, there are many issues that I care about, many issues that weave in and out of my own political philosophies and my beliefs. The third thing that I want to talk about is small businesses and the need for us to get back on the side of small businesses and help small businesses grow. And there are a lot of aspects of small businesses that need to be addressed. First of all, we don't treat small businesses, which are really the heart of the American economy, as well as we treat corporations who have been around for a long time and reap much, much higher profits. We provide tax incentives to them that we don't provide to small businesses. It makes it harder for small businesses to start. It makes it harder for small businesses to grow. And in the end, that hurts us. That hurts all of us. So my campaign is going to be about looking at these issues, finding out how we can find a more equitable approach to dealing with these issues and improving the lives of everybody in this country, regardless of where they come from and who they are. So I want to thank you for coming out and being engaged in your community and caring about these issues. And with that, I'll take some questions now.
Yeah, I can help moderate.
Oh, great.
So who has some questions for Brad? Yeah.
Hi, thanks for running and thanks for coming. For years I've heard talking about small businesses, and I agree with you. The Democrats are not allies with small business. Do you believe that's true? And then what can we as Democrats do to let businesses know that we're really with them? Because they are the backbone of the economy.
Yeah, that's a great question. It's unfortunate. I think a lot of Democrats, as you say, it does not appear that through their actions, through their what they say to people, that they've been on the side of small businesses. But I do think there is a sizable amount of Democrats that do care about small businesses. And really, I think it comes down to recognizing what it is about small businesses that really should incentivize us to help them. And the kinds of policies that it will take to help small businesses actually grow. So a lot of times, I think Democrats get thrown into this pot of, oh, you're anti-business, you want unions to be strong, so that wages stay high, and then, you know, companies can't reap as much profit. And I don't necessarily think that's true as applied to small businesses. I think there are a lot of things that we can do. Medicare for All, it's another reason why I'm a huge supporter of Medicare for All, because I think small businesses will reap tremendous benefit from that, from not having to worry about the health care of their employees. And I think small businesses there will be an increase in the number of small businesses that start, because there will be more labor market fluidity when people are less worried about, oh, I would love to be an entrepreneur, I'd love to start my own business, but I can't because I have a family, I have this job, my health care is tied to my employment, I can't go out and venture and do something new. And so that hurts us as an economy. So my hope is that a lot more Democrats really latch on to that idea and we're able to kind of put the table on that idea.
Any other questions? Yeah. Do you have a website that we can look deeper into your philosophy? philosophy?
I do. It's bradwestmoreland.org. Yeah, there's a nice picture of me on there. Nice little set of issues, you know, just a handful of issues that, you know, to talk about my thoughts on it. There's a way for you to put your name on a list so you can get updates about my campaign. And also, I'd like to give you my email address, which is just brad@bradwestmoreland.org. It's pretty simple to remember. If you have any questions, you know, you can feel free to reach out to me personally. I love talking to constituents and learning more about community, learning more about what your ideas are.
I actually have a question.
Oh.
So I think something that's really important is having a Democratic Party that's united. And so I know you're running against another Democrat. If you were to win or to lose in the primary, would you throw your support behind another Democrat, even though your ideals and principles may not entirely match? And if not, why?
Oh, yeah. So a good example of this is what happened in the last election. I was a huge Bernie Sanders supporter. I believed strongly in the things that he believed in. I really wanted him to be president. But when he lost the primary and Hillary Clinton became the nominee, I was happy about that too. And I voted for her. And if I was unfortunate enough to win the primary in this case, I would absolutely support Dr. Berry, because it is important for Democrats to have the seats that we have, and it's important for us to gain more seats. And the reason that I've gotten into this race is because I truly believe that this district is underperforming. And I think one of the reasons this district is underperforming as far as Democratic turnout goes is because we are not engaging in a lot of young people, a lot of people from minority communities, because we are not speaking to the issues that really matter to them. And those are the issues that I really want to talk about, really want to champion. And hopefully, regardless of what happens to me in the primaries, that will get more people involved in the Democratic process, and we can have, you know, a safer seat here in District 7 for Democrats.
As I think about this stuff, which I do on a regular basis, not necessarily with any great conclusions, but I'm very, very important, a couple of things. One is we can't be divided. We cannot afford to be divided. And it is scary as all get out to think that we're going to go into the 2018 elections against each other. So hearing you say that, that you would put your support behind Dr. Barrett is very reassuring, I guess. But the other part of that is, how do you pull both sides together? I mean, to me, you really have to get the moderates and the progressives to meet somewhere, because nobody's always going to agree on the way to do things. So I think I'd like to hear a little bit about how you think you can help make that happen, number one. Number two, healthcare, money and politics, and small businesses. You have to weave a thread between the three of them. You have to show people how one affects the other. And to me, money and politics, they call me, they text me, they want my $5, they want my $3. If I gave all that money to, you know, I'd be broke, and, you know, I'm in a fixed income. So I think it's great when I give what I can, but there's got to be money in politics somewhere, somehow. And how you get that money and how you spend that money is, you know, it's pretty important stuff. But in order to get the money, you've got to convince people that we're going to be able to get money from pharmaceutical companies and from drug from healthcare companies. And it's going to have to be some kind of plan that's going to be attractive to them as well as to us. And then the other thing that makes me crazy is this is a democracy. That's our form of government. Capitalism is not our form of government. It's an economy. And so if you're, you've got Citizens United looking at capitalism as a person, we got to get rid of that. We've got to get rid of Citizens United. So drawing together moderates and progressives, making a path between healthcare and money and politics and small businesses, so that the common ordinary citizen can understand that stuff. Drawing lines or connecting it somehow, to me and then the Citizens United. Those are three huge things. And so you're biting off a lot.
Well, I appreciate the question. Boy, I'll tell you, if I could solve the issue on how to bring moderate Democrats and progressives to the table, I would probably be pretty famous right now, because that's a tall task. As far as a strategy to do that, you know, I think it can be a problem, but it's also a blessing, because it shows the Democratic Party is a lot different than the Republican Party, because the Democratic Party is so much more diverse. We have so many people who come from so many different walks of life, who have so many different life experiences. And that itself creates a lot of different perspectives, a lot of different, you know, ways of looking at the world. And so we disagree about what the best approach is politically, and that's okay. And that's okay. But you're absolutely right. At the end of the day, we do need to, and I think it's just that we don't talk enough to each other. I think progressives and moderate Democrats, we need to realize there is more that unifies us than what divides us. Right, and I certainly don't want to be relitigating the 2016 presidential election. I don't think it's particularly helpful. I think, you know, we do have to move forward. As far as weaving a narrative strand between healthcare, money, and politics, and small businesses, we have to realize that in this day and age, politics is not so much about left versus right; it's about top versus bottom. So healthcare is the way it is because there is a lot of money in the health insurance companies, in the pharmaceutical companies, in the medical device manufacturing companies, the banks that finance these companies, and the lobbying firms who, you know, do their bidding for them. So they're at the top, and they get to make the rules because they contribute to the campaigns of elected officials who make the rules. And that also connects to small business, because corporations that make higher profits, they're able to do the same thing. And so they are able to change the tax code to be better for them. They're able to change labor laws so they don't have to pay their workers as much. Whereas small businesses don't really have that advantage because they're working on smaller profit margins. So as far as the narrative between those, I think we have to really get out and talk to people and say, you know, there is so much more that unites the Democrat with the Republican who come from similar socioeconomic situations than divides them. Because we have to convince these people that the people at the top, they do not care about you. They don't care about, you know, you're having a fulfilling life. They care about making sure their shareholders are making the kinds of returns that they believe they should be making on their investments. So it's a complicated issue. I appreciate that question. It's important. We do have to figure out a way to do that. I wish that I could come up with the answers of how to do that now. But I think it starts with dialogue. It starts talking to each other.
And also perhaps putting it down on paper, you know, so that you can see the connections and see how, you know, this goes to this, goes to this, goes to this. And then having that dialogue with the people that you are working with.
Absolutely.
This is a hypothetical.
Oh, good.
But maybe not too far out.
I'm going to flashback to law school.
where I've never been. So some people say that fixing the Affordable Care Act and having a Romney Care style health care plan for the U.S., which is where it all started, right, is going to be much more politically doable than single payer So where would that leave you if you were in office?
I think that, did anyone get a chance to watch the healthcare debate on CNN last night?
Yeah.
It was really good. And the two Democrats that are on the stage, they really hit on something important, which is the Affordable Care Act has a lot of issues now. A lot of that's because people on the other side of the aisle have not wanted to embrace it and implement it properly.
It's been sabotaged.
That's right. So that's a major problem. So then you have to ask yourself, is the American political landscape going to change enough over the next 50 years where they won't be incentivized to do that? I'm not sure. I think the sabotage will continue because that seems to be the nature of politics and the future of it for some time. As far as the ACA and a Romney Care thing, as you say, and a single payer, I think it comes down to a short versus long-term approach. Short-term, we do need to come to some kind of agreement across the aisle of ways that we can make sure that the people who have insurance now are able to keep it, the costs come down. But long-term, we do need to think about what is going to be best for this country. Because the fact is, we spend so much more on our healthcare than we need to spend on it. And we get worse health outcomes because of it. So it's not a sustainable model. And a lot of the people in the health insurance industry and the pharmaceutical industry know this, but they don't really connect with it because that is not what is important to them. So long term, this is something that we really need to look at. We really need to look at Medicare for All single payer. Because it's my opinion that as long as health insurance companies and pharmaceutical companies and the medical device manufacturing companies are there, well, at least as long as the health insurance companies are there, we will never be able to cover everybody in this country. They don't have interest in covering people that can't pay for their services. So, some people might say that, well, eventually the government will make up the difference. I'm not as optimistic, but it's a good discussion to have. Thank you.
Yeah, I just wondered if you'd tell us something about yourself, like your background, or Jacqueline said that you're an attorney and a lawyer. I wondered, have you been working in politics or in some health field?
No, I haven't. I haven't been working as an attorney in politics. No, I'm an attorney for the state. As Jacqueline said, I come from Northern California. I grew up in Yuba City. But I don't say go Honkers because I actually went to Sutter Union High School. So that was the last piece.
I say go Honkers.
Yeah. And when I graduated high school, I went to college in Utah. I spent some time in Brazil. I went to law school in Seattle, Washington. And after that, I came back home. Growing up, I worked construction with my dad. He was a general contractor for a long time. My mom runs a daycare, still to this day. So, I mean, that's basically the snapshot that I can give you of where I come from. And now I live here in Elk Grove with my wife, and like Jacqueline said, we have a first baby on the way, and we have a dog named Daisy, and she just likes to shed over everything. So,
what kind?
It's a yellow lab.
I knew it.
I know another yellow lab.
Okay. You mentioned political corruption earlier, a very important issue. I think one of the biggest either symptoms or causes, or only both, is gerrymandering, how politicians basically choose their voters, which is you're the attorney, not me, the textbook definition of a conflict of interest. We need solutions to this, but where would you stand on one of the most foolproof solutions would be proportional representation, where basically you divide the vote based on what each party gets. So you don't have a situation where the Democrats win 50% of the vote in Pennsylvania and come out with 5 seats and the Republicans get 13. Do you support do you support proportional representation?
I'm supportive of any idea that will overcome the effects of gerrymandering, because like you say, it is a horrendous part of the political institutions. I don't know if you've ever had a chance to do this, but if you go to, I forget what the website is, but you can look at the congressional districts around the country. Yeah. If you go to North Carolina, if you go to Texas, it's depressing what has happened in these places. We need to take a good hard look at all of our electoral institutions. I mean, the person who gets 3 million more votes in the presidential election still doesn't get to become president. These are issues that we need to talk about, and it just shows you the scope of how much work there is to be done. So it's going to take a lot of unity. It's going to take a lot of hard work for us to come together and really, really attack these issues.
Okay, so you grew up in New York City, pretty conservative part of California. Oh, yeah. You went to school in Sutter, pretty conservative, and you went to Utah, an upset. Why are you a Democrat?
It's a good question. It's a combination of a lot of things, but I would say two pretty important parts of that. Was when I lived in Brazil for 2 years. I went down there and I saw poverty like I'd never seen it before. I'd seen political corruption like I'd never seen it before. I'd seen the way that people live. And while I was there, I was like, I'm the luckiest person in the world. I live in the United States of America. This kind of stuff doesn't happen there. And silly me. And then I go back home and I realize that is all here. It's just hidden a little bit better than it is down there. So that was one thing. And just seeing how disenfranchised people can be when people don't care about them, when people don't care about their interests and aren't fighting for them, aren't fighting for the little guy instead of the person who's going to get it. And the second thing that was a huge influence was going to law school and seeing how the law, how the judicial system, how the legislative process, how all of that has been used from the beginning of our country till now to effectuate some really terrible things, some really great things. And the common thread in that is that it all depends on whose hands it falls into. And so it's incumbent on us to put the right people in those positions to make those decisions, because it has an effect across generations, across races, across genders, across all aspects of life.
So the typical dynamic of political campaigns, I'm not so much sure about primaries, but certainly in the general elections, has been for lack of a better term, attack ads. So can you speak to your ability to conduct a campaign on a somewhat different level, or how do you see? Do you have a strategy along those lines?
Well, my strategy. When I think of attack ads, what I think of is a dark screen, a terrible picture of the opponent, and some headline that is not real. That's what I think of when I think of an attack ad. What I don't have a problem with is the truth. Sometimes the truth can offend some people when it exposes them for what they're doing and who they are. And it's important that we speak the truth. So that's my strategy, is to say the truth. I'm not out to attack anybody. I'm not out to make up things about people. I'm not here to exaggerate things. I'm here to say, this is the objective truth, this is what is happening, and you can decide what you want to do with that information. That's my take on that.
Okay. You mentioned that under Dr. Barra, you thought our district was underperforming, and you thought that we should be more engaged in whatever. Can you give me a couple of examples of things you see that affect us as your constituents in our district and what you would like to see different and what you would do about it.
Yeah, so Jesse Jackson gave a great speech back in 1984. This is when he was running for president and he was talking about the Reagan election in 1980. And he was just talking about, you know, in the state of Ohio, Reagan won by 20,000 votes or something like that. And there were 500,000 students in that state who were unregistered and 600,000 blacks who weren't registered to vote. And so it's about that difference. We're underperforming because we should be, if we could mobilize the people in the Democratic Party that are in this district to engage with these campaigns and engage in the political process, we would see a higher turnout. But we have to be talking about things that matter to those people. And it's not going to be the same thing for each one. For some people, political corruption is going to be something that they really care about. And we have to offer them something on that front. For some people, healthcare is going to be the thing they really care about. For some people, it's going to be education. So we have to present a bold, united vision for what this country should be going after. Because if we don't, people will stay home because they fall into that trap. They fall into that trap of, well, really, what's the difference between the two parties? I don't see the difference in my life. The things they're proposing aren't really that different from one another. So we really have to distinguish ourselves. And it's not an easy thing to do, but it is something that we can do. It just takes a lot of effort.
If I may just add that Cheryl will probably tell everybody at the end of the meeting that we had over 12,000 registered Democrat that were midterm skippers in 2014. So that speaks to what he was just talking about.
If it were the night before next year's primary, why would I vote for you rather than Dr. Vera?
That's a great question. I think it's because I need you. I'm not trying to, like, you know, quote some sappy love movie or romance movie or anything. It's because I'm beholden to you. I am not going to go to Washington, D.C. and start knocking on doors or start answering doors for people who are going to make sure that I get to keep my job by putting all kinds of money into my campaign. That's not where my values lie. It's not where my principles stand. I care about working for the people of this district and for the people of this country, and I'm not interested in preserving my own job for the sake of abandoning my principles on that point. So I think that's it.
So you mentioned that, you know, getting money out of politics and corruption in the political structure, and just like you were just mentioning in regards to you working for us and not taking money from big corporations. So are you prepared to be completely transparent with your campaign as far as all your donations? You don't have to disclose under a certain amount, but are you going to disclose them all? And are you going to vet which corporations that you actually will accept money from? Because they're going to throw money at you if they think that you have a chance, and it won't all be good money. They will be beholden to them in their eyes. How are you going to make those choices? And what entities do you think are like a no-go? Like, you simply wouldn't accept money from what corporation?
Right. So great question. And absolutely, I'm not going to be accepting money from PACs, organizations whose purpose is contrary to the values that I have. So that means fossil fuel industry, coal industry, it means the health insurance industry, pharmaceutical industries, medical manufacturing company. And just to give you a broader idea of what I'm saying is that I think that who you accept money from is an indicator of what your values are. And I would never be willing to put myself in a position where my values will be compromised because I wanted money from somebody. To me, that's just morally and ethically wrong. So if an organization gave to my campaign and I thought that organization didn't represent what was best for working class Americans, then I would happily send it back.
May I have one more follow-up?
Okay.
So I feel like everybody feels that way when they get into politics the first time. You're super idealistic and they're like, I'm never going to take money from, you know, a corporation. But then you get in there and you have 2 years to raise money, you know, millions of dollars for another election. So they're constantly fundraising. So what are you going to do for yourself to make sure that you stay accountable to not just us, but to yourself of the values you just espoused?
So I have a great strategy. I'm going to be playing a lottery every single time. No, it's a good question, because one of the reasons that so much money is being poured into District 7 is because it is competitive the way that it is. So if you want to not take money from the kinds of groups that want to hurt your constituents, you have to increase the margins. You have to get more people out to vote. So you don't have to raise as much money to put out that political tax ad. We can spend a lot less on our campaign in this district if we increase our margins, if we get more people out to vote, if we turn this purple district into a solidly blue district. The Republicans won't pour as much money in. We don't have to pour as much money in. We'd have to stay mobilized, and we'd have to keep pushing the ball forward, to use a sports metaphor.
We have time for a couple more questions. Yeah.
Regardless, campaigns are expensive. Mm-hmm. You're going to need to raise money. You're going to need to have money, because you can't function without it to win. How are you going to go about that? What is your plan?
That's a good question. My plan is to...
We have a credit card reader at the back. No,
yeah, that's right. Yeah. Chris is going to be passing around a hat. It's about fundraisers with hamburgers, that kind of thing, very, very low key. I'm a big believer, like I was just saying, that we really don't need to be spending as much money. We can be resourceful in our approach. There are ways that we can save money. There are ways that we can be effective and get our message out without spending so much money. It takes creativity. It's going to take creativity and some resourcefulness. As far as raising money, I mean, we might have to start passing on that.
Well, let's remember that Bernie Sanders didn't take any corporate money. And I gave to him a couple different times. $27. Mm-hmm. So it can be done.
I don't know what I'm going to need. No. It's a first time experience for me. It's something I'm really excited about. I learn something new every day. And I'm willing to do things differently. I'm willing to think outside of the box, because I have to. Because I'm not going to raise $4 million like Dr. Vera. Okay. I'm not going to have the DNC, DCCC pouring another $4 million into my campaign. It's just not going to happen. But I think there is a real possibility of increasing the number of young people who aren't as engaged in the political process in this district, and really getting those numbers up, getting people excited, getting people to go knock on doors, getting the word out. I think that can be done.
Last question? Oh, I'm sorry. I haven't asked a question yet. Sorry,
Dave. I asked one.
Oh, you did? Okay, well, have the last two questions. All right, someone go first.
Dr. Vera went to Korea last week. And he's on the Foreign Affairs Committee, and he's planning on going again very shortly. Are you prepared for the moral storms that this presidency causes every single day?
Is anybody? it's, you know, the what's happening with North Korea and our country right now is it's pretty baffling. And it just goes to show how important it is to mobilize people before that kind of person gets that kind of power and that kind of access. So what's important to me is staying true to my values, staying true to my principles. I will stand against any values and principles that are contrary to mine. I'm happy to do that, regardless of where it comes from. So if it comes from the President of the United States, then that's
So my question is, do you have a plan, like a business plan, let's say, a political plan, for what you're going to do from tonight to the primary?
Well, I do. I don't know if I feel comfortable spreading it around everybody.
I do.
All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us. Can we give him a round of applause? And you can always send him an email, brad@bradwestmoreland.org, .com, right? .org. And then he does have a website as well at bradwestmoreland.org. Okay, that's all of memory. So check him out. I'm sure he'll be joining us. We have a long time till primaries, so I'm sure he'll be joining us again and gracing us with his presence. We're going to move on to the